We're happy to hear argument in our first case, United States versus Gonzalez. Mr. Brent?
Good morning. May it please the court, Jeff Brandt for Isabel Gonzalez. Mr. Gonzalez raised a claim in his 2255, among others, that his attorney was ineffective for failing to consult with him about appealing. The district court eventually held an evidentiary hearing with counsel and denied relief. The parties agree that the district court did not address whether trial counsel consulted with Mr. Gonzalez about filing a notice of appeal.
And your claim isn't a denial, a refusal to file a notice of appeal, but a failure to consult.
Correct, Your Honor. I don't think the facts support an argument that Mr. Gonzalez directly told trial counsel, go file a notice of appeal.
But the judge said he didn't think he had any obligation to consult with him.
That's what I understand as well, Judge King. The records.
You weren't there. You just got into this thing on appeal?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
But you know that's no excuse.
Absolutely.
I didn't mean to give you any.
I know you didn't.
Yes, Your Honors. I do think the record shows the district court believed that trial counsel had no duty to consult with Mr. Gonzalez.
And the Supreme Court says you do.
And I think the Supreme Court says you do about appealing despite the existence of an appeal waiver. So I think on that issue, it's a combination of Flores-Ortega, this court's decision in Frazier, and others like, Poindexter, sorry.
Well, you're saying that's just an error of law, and we ought to send it back and have that complied with?
As I mentioned, I think early in the reply brief, Mr. Gonzalez, very frankly, would hope that the court sees that the record's clear, says, okay, on these facts, that's ineffective assistance of counsel, the three factors that need to be met. But frankly, that might not be the case. If we have a district court not reaching the question of whether the attorney consulted at all, that might be the correct remedy, is to send it back and we'd ask for,
well,
hopefully
it has to be the remedy, doesn't it? Because we need some findings on that one way or the other.
A finding, yes, Your Honor. I do know.
What would you have us do then? You don't want us to
very tentatively ask for.
You don't want us to affirm it?
No, he wants us to read
of course
it.
Not affirm. But the first, I note from this court's decision in Bostick, if there's enough evidence despite the failure to rule below.
You have to rule on the merits of that claim.
If there's enough evidence to say, and I'm being very frank, that's what Mr. Gonzalez would hope. If the court
what's
sees
your alternative argument?
Send it back for findings on whether the consulting occurred and whether it was adequate.
Can you outline for me what you believe the Supreme Court says about consulting?
If you, number one, if a rational, reasonable defendant under this circumstance would want to appeal, you better consult. Number two, if there's reasonable
even
grounds.
Even if there's been a waiver of appeal?
I don't know that Flores Ortega says that.
Well, that's what we got here, though.
I know, and that's what makes this one interesting for this court, because it is a combination of Flores Ortega and this court's decisions about you still have that duty despite the existence of a notice of appeal. So I'd love to say it's in Flores Ortega. I don't find it.
Well, the Supreme Court said you had the duty despite the notice of appeal. It just said that your burden was more difficult if there had been a waiver of a right to appeal.
It's a factor there.
Doesn't the Supreme Court discuss that?
Yes, but I'm hoping that this court still feels that its case law is stronger on that issue. It's not just a factor. It's that the existence of the waiver doesn't necessarily somehow mean that duty doesn't exist. And that
well,
seems to be.
The Supreme Court didn't say the duty didn't exist.
Absolutely not.
It just said it was a factor.
Yes.
So I don't understand why. I would think you'd be happy with, because there was a recognition by the Supreme Court that even if there was a waiver of the right to appeal, there was still some sort of duty to consult. And it seems to me that the district court hadn't understood, which is, you know, was a novel theory when Flores-Ortega came out. Yeah. So
I'm thrilled with Flores-Ortega, Judge Motz. I just like I like this court's case law better. I like the language of this court.
Our case law has to be consistent with the Supreme Court.
Yes, Your Honor. It's almost that, I guess my, how I imagine it, and I imagine crazy things, I admit, is that there's kind of a little bit of a gap in Flores-Ortega that doesn't say, hey, listen, you can't just point to an appeal waiver to somehow shut it down. It's a factor to be considered, and fortunately in that case it did not get in the way. Whereas the case law of this court says, look, you still have that duty no matter what.
Seems to me they say the same thing. I'm not getting, and I think that you're kind of hurting your case by saying, because if Flores-Ortega is more restrictive, you know.
I don't think it's restrictive.
We all make mistakes. So maybe we made a mistake.
I think it's more silent, is what I would argue, not more restrictive.
Just so I understand it, Flores-Ortega does discuss the instance where there is a waiver of a right to appeal.
Yes.
And it still says there's a duty to consult.
Correct.
Okay.
Thank you. I debated whether it was worth arguing before the court or mentioning before the court what the district court judge said. I think it's clear. It's not worth reading. I would mention that at worst we would ask for a remand, and at worst we would ask for a new.
Ask for a remand?
Yes, again, asking as that first alternative under Bostick if the court finds that there's enough evidence to find that counsel was ineffective, and save that extra step of going back to the district court. It's been back there.
They don't reach constitutional questions unless we have to.
I mean, as a matter of
them. Why wouldn't Eichwander come into play? You're opening that up.
Good point. What does my client want? What does he want to see happen? Well, hopefully not go back to the same district court judge more than anything else.
You don't have anything in the record about
Did you even ask for that in your papers?
I may have in the reply when
You know the law. You have to ask for it in your...
Yes, Your Honor.
Can we go back to your worst-case scenario, the remand? What is it you want on remand?
It would have to be a remand for an evidentiary hearing on whatever this court feels has not been answered, or for the district court judge.
So what do you think has not been answered? Because she testified that she would have gone back and talked to him about the possibility of appeal. That's her habit and practice, and she does it on a regular basis. In every case, she testified about that, and the district court found.
We argue in both of our briefs that there is enough there to find the counsel was ineffective.
But what is that? What is it that they should have gotten out at the district court that they did not? That's what the judge is asking you.
I don't think there's anything, but I'm asking this court that if you find...
Well, then the judge could decide it on the basis of the record. He could ask the parties if they have evidence to present, and if you say you don't have any, and if the government says it doesn't have any, then the court could undertake to decide the issue that you say has not been decided on the basis of the record.
The remand could be simply, from that evidentiary hearing, address that legal question that you didn't.
Why would we restrict somebody from not putting on additional evidence if they come up with some?
I'm not suggesting the court restrict it.
No, you may have an expert or something.
Correct.
You want to throw up there.
I see.
Try to explain the law. I don't know what normally that might not be admissible either, but you might come up with something. I don't know. Your client may want to testify.
Here's why the concern comes up. As soon as the evidentiary hearing gets to the point of talking about consulting, the judge is annoyed by habeas defense counsel's questioning and says, let's wrap this up. You're going into stuff that doesn't have anything to do with anything. Why are you asking these questions? When the assistant U.S. attorney
not do that if somebody had said, why don't we look at all of us? Look at the Supreme Court authority and Fourth Circuit authority on this issue. Let's inform ourselves of what the law is and then take it into account. I mean, nobody stood up and said that. Where were counsel? I mean, if the judge got the law wrong, both the lawyers have some obligation to say, Judge, I think you are misconstruing the applicable legal principles here or misunderstanding them, misapprehending them. We all ought to I urge you to look at these cases, this Flores case, Judge O'Connor and all that stuff, and see what it says and see what it impacts on it. She actually talks about waivers. I mean, anyway, the lawyers dropped. Maybe they dropped the ball, too. I wouldn't throw all this at the judge.
Yes, Your Honor. I admit Ms. Berry did not
I mean,
cite.
Afraid, maybe you were afraid of it. I mean, but I don't know. I don't. But you have an obligation to try to get it right, both lawyers do, before it comes up here.
I think Ms. Berry did.
Don't blame the judge for all of it.
Yes, Your Honor. I think Ms. Berry did a pretty good job of saying, I don't think that's the law, Your Honor. In the transcript, about 333, she did not cite Flores Ortega. That's true.
The government didn't say a word about it. I mean, all the lawyers in the courtroom could read the Supreme Court cases on this and find them probably in 30 seconds on their iPad or something.
Can we go back to Judge Thacker's question for just a minute? Because I didn't think it was quite the same as the – I didn't think the answer directly met the question. The Supreme Court said that counsel has a constitutionally imposed duty to consult with the defendant about an appeal when either a rational defendant would want to appeal, for example, there's a non-frivolous ground for appeal, or – this particular defendant reasonably demonstrated to counsel that he was interested in appealing. Okay, so which basis do you think is here?
It's the second one.
Okay.
I think it's that second prong. And
think there is evidence in the record in front of the district court that he was presented with a defendant that was interested in appealing?
Mr. Gonzalez testified that after seeing the PSR, he told trial counsel he wanted to appeal because she had lied to him about the sentence. He testified that her response was, you can't appeal, but then he continues to seek that. He testifies that he...
So you don't, but what I was really getting at is you don't claim there's a non-frivolous grounds for appeal. That's not the basis for the consultation.
No, Your Honor.
Okay.
And if I didn't answer that earlier, I apologize.
No, I just, maybe you did, but I didn't quite...
He testified that he had a fellow inmate write a letter because he had wanted to see his attorney in chambers. She didn't come. He sent the letter. The purpose of the letter was say, come see me. I want to talk to you about an appeal. The word appeal was not in that letter. That's clear from the record, but his purpose in sending that letter is clear. And I think this
court's order, the court found that after hearing the testimony of both counsel and Mr. Gonzalez, in light of Ms. Aguirre's testimony and Mr. Gonzalez's failure to present any evidence to the contrary, the court found that Mr. Gonzalez did not make an unequivocal request to counsel to notice a direct appeal.
Correct.
So the court considered all of that and concluded.
That's asking a direct request for an appeal, not would she have known, having heard him, that he wanted to appeal. So go see him after sentencing hearing in the box, or go see him in the lockup, you know, two floors down or wherever it is.
And then that's when she testified she would have done that as her regular habit and practice. That's what she does, is go back and talk to her clients about the...
But when directly asked, she says, no, I did not...
She didn't say no. She says, I do not have a direct recollection because it was a decade ago.
But I thought your argument lie in the fact that... the district court seemed to think that there was not a direct request for appeal, and Flores Ortega seems to have something less than a direct request for appeal triggering this right to consult, this duty to consult.
Right. A reasonable attorney getting that feeling, I better go talk to this guy.
Well, I think you're doing yourself in not going to talk to a reasonable attorney demonstrating some, a client demonstrating to the counsel that he was interested. There's nothing about going and talking. There's nothing about whatever, what is demonstrating. So that's what it is. It's not any more than that when you need to trigger this. All right, I think we understand your position. Do you have something more?
I was just going to say, when directly asked whether she went and discussed the advantages and disadvantages, her answer was she would not have discussed that in any detail as far as going on as if to qualify that answer, cutting herself off and saying no.
Thank you very much. I think there are some. Are there some seats left in front? Here? Are there some seats? There's people outside that are clawing to get in some fashion. Are there? Can people kind of move over? You know, like church. make room for people. I don't know if they're trying to get in or just curious.
We don't usually draw crowds.
No, we don't usually draw crowds. They must have mistaken us for somebody else.
Good morning, Your Honor. Good morning. May it please the court, Seth Wood on behalf of the United States. The parties do agree the district court did not directly address consultation in the written order.
And the parties agree that we have jurisdiction.
Yes, we do agree to that. And so the question is the record presented in that April 2012 evidentiary hearing sufficient for this court to affirm the overall outcome of this case, namely denying the defendant's claim here? We argue that the evidence presented in the April 2012 hearing shows two things. First, that counsel did make an attempt to consult with her client regarding an appeal.
But what about the fact the court didn't address it, you said?
Right. I mean, if that's determinative for this court, then it's going to need to remand it back for further fact-finding or findings by the district court. But this court can affirm.
But you're wanting us to address what y'all did.
Right.
What was not addressed in the district court.
Right.
You recognize the district court didn't address it.
Yes, Your Honor. We do recognize it.
And do you espouse the views that the district court had about appeal waivers?
No. I mean, the written order of the court talking about Poindexter, that's correct. The fact that you have an appeal waiver obviously doesn't obviate your duty to file a notice of appeal if you're instructed to do so. That's the direct appeal line of things. As to consultation, as Your Honor read from Flores-Ortega, there's an obligation to consult. Best practice is to consult every time, but there's a constitutional obligation to consult in those two circumstances Your Honor talked about.
Is it the practice in that district not to tell counsel after they've pled that they have a right to appeal?
I didn't do a full-on read through that district court judge's opinions on that.
You didn't do a full read on the record in this case?
No, I did a read on the record.
Well,
I'm sorry.
Saw what's in the record.
Correct.
Now I'm asking you if that is the practice in the district.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean yes?
No, I'm saying as to all the other district judges, the answer is no.
Your practice.
No, the judges, I know, I mean, I could read the
you
list of judges.
You don't have to tell us the judge's name.
Okay. I mean, the general practice for most of the judges is to always say you have a right to an appeal, you got a plea, appeal waiver here, that may bar your ultimately make your appeal unsuccessful, but you've got a right. In this case, for this district court did not apprise Mr. Gonzalez.
The agreement had an exception in it, didn't it?
For ineffective assistance or prosecutorial misconduct, not known at the time of the guilty plea.
Which is ineffective assistance, what one of the things he's talking about.
Well, right. That allows
that allows the
petitioner.
That's the issue. He wants us to decide on appeal. He wants us to decide the ineffective assistance claim, and you want us to decide the consultation, which is tied into it.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wants us to decide it. And why did not the lawyers do something at the hearing? Stand up and say, I've got this case from the Supreme Court mm-hmm. that seems to inform what we're doing here. Maybe we all ought to look at it. What's your answer to that? Does the government not have any obligation in this regard?
The better practice would have been to raise the case, obviously. But the defense counsel did stand her ground. I'm pretty sure the memorandum that she filed prior to the hearing mentions Flores-Ortega as well. The fact that the record in this case is pretty robust in terms of answering the questions that one has to go through in terms of the consultation claim indicates that that there was some knowledge on the part of the counsel to try to kind of address these issues.
Did you handle it below? Did you handle the case below?
No, Your Honor, I did not.
Well, did the Assistant United States Attorneys meet to discuss cases that are in the court as they do in Maryland?
You
mean after the fact, in other words?
Oh, I see. Not always, sometimes.
It might be a good idea to kind of spread the word, because one often does read the record when district courts are busy mm-hmm. and they don't reach something and you want to be sure it's okay for appeal that even the government comes up with the argument.
Right, and we are, our office has made an effort to try to centralize the collateral matters into one section. And so we're aware of this situation. We're aware of the consultation.
This would come anytime.
Sure.
There was an appeal waiver, and there are often appeal waivers.
Sure. If I could, and we argued that there was consultation, and that's in our brief. If I could address more directly the defendant's argument regarding the reasonable demonstration of an interest in appealing, the only evidence that was presented on that point is the claim that he told his attorney to file a notice of appeal.
Well, that's pretty strong. It's credible.
Well, right. The point that we're trying to make is that really is about, that's about the failure to file a directed appeal. It's over in this column.
No, it's also a basis for thinking that a particular defendant reasonably demonstrated to counsel that he was interested in appealing. That triggers the duty to consult, says the Supreme Court.
Right. If the court views it as conceivably doing either, then it's just a question of whether there was a consultation, at least in terms of sending it back. Obviously, at this point, there'd be a difference in fact, a dispute of a fact here, because Ms. Aguirre, of course, testified that she would have met, she would have talked through the, pursuant to her habits and practices, would have talked through the defendant's right to
refresh my recollection. I thought that was in answer to if he requested that you file an appeal, mm-hmm. you would have done this. Was she asked if he indicated some interest in an appeal, which apparently is all the Supreme Court requires, mm-hmm. that she would have consulted with him? I don't know that she was directly asked that question.
No, that's fair.
She may be asked that question on remand.
Right.
So maybe you need a little bit of testimony, a little more testimony.
Well,
Judge Mott's helping you out here.
Did
any of you all think about when you get ready for this thing, confess an error and asking us to remand it, send it back for further proceeding?
Right.
I mean, we got a lot of people. If we get 5,000 cases a year, and a lot of them want arguments, and some deserve it a lot.
I understand.
And this may not deserve it as much as some of the others.
I understand. We looked at the record, and I understand that there may be a difference in opinion of what the record shows. But in our mind, the record is sufficient to support a finding that there was consultation, or alternatively, there wasn't an obligation to consult. And that's why we're here to argue that point.
Right.
To answer your Honor's question, if this court were to determine that there was an error and that there is additional something needs to happen, our preferred outcome would be a remand for the district court to consider the matter.
You're not confessing error today.
No, Your Honor, we're not.
Even though you say that you would acknowledge that the court there was no consultation. Court didn't address the consultation issue.
Court did not address consultation. Our entire argument on that is that this court can affirm for any basis in the record, and we're trying to say that this record has enough to support a favorable finding for us on the consultation claim. If the court disagrees, then that's fine. Then we'll take the remand.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Your Honors, we would respectfully submit that what the government has pointed to as, quote, sufficient consultation isn't what Flores-Ortega is talking about at all. This was after an indictment, before a guilty plea, talking about the two different directions a case can go. The analogy the trial counsel made was there's a train, we're going to go down cooperation or we're going to go down trial. That's not sufficient. Consultation about whether to appeal, again, when asked disadvantages and advantages of appealing, did you ask that question? Although she tries to skirt it for a second, she ends up admitting no. When it comes to evidence of that Mr. Gonzalez would have appealed, what this court said in Frazier applies, quote, tenacity in pursuing habeas relief, end quote, is relevant and weighed in the defendant's favor toward prejudice. For these reasons, we again ask that if the court finds it can do so on the record, find that counsel was ineffective, otherwise remand, either for an evidentiary hearing if the court feels those facts are insufficient to make a ruling one way or another, or for a decision simply based upon the evidentiary hearing that's already occurred addressing consultation.
Who wrote that Frazier case?
Judge Duncan.
Judge Duncan.
Sorry, Duncan. I've got it back there.
No, that's
fine. There was a dissent from Judge Ludwig. I was the third person.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, we will come down and greet the lawyers and then go directly to our next case. Sir, I understand you're court appointed, is that correct? We very much appreciate your efforts. We couldn't get along without court appointed lawyers, and we very much appreciate